Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.
The cinema specialist Phil and John are back, and today we are getting into the Valentine's Day spirit by discussing the 10 most heartbreaking relationships in film history. So John and I figured let's jump on in. Everybody's in that loving mood. Friday is Valentine's Day. Paddington in Peru comes out. Everybody's stoked about that. My wife and I went and saw I'm Not Here on Friday night. And then she made us go back into the theater after so she could buy the Paddington in Peru popcorn tin. So we had to get that. So everybody's in a joyful mood. Everybody's all excited. You know, it's like, woohoo, Valentine's Day, happiness, love, romance, all of that. We figured we had to put our spin on it, and we had to find the depressing versions of all of these stories. So these are your top 10 Valentine's Day heartbreaks from both of us. And yeah, if you're a patron at the $5 tier, you already heard us talk about Brokeback Mountain last Tuesday, which was the 4th. Tomorrow we'll be talking about After Sun, which is a movie I just watched, finished about an hour and 15 minutes ago, first time I've seen it. So if I'm absolutely miserable tonight, it's because I just watched that, and John and I understood the assignment when we were putting these together. But here we are. We're going to dive in. This is all about finding those really, really, really depressing relationships. So what's important about this, though, is this isn't just going to be the most depressing movies you've ever seen, right? Like we would just go through our top 100s, though. That's the problem, right? Like, yes. The Deer Hunter is my number one movie. It's also very, very depressing. That's not what this is about. This is about really depressing relationships and focusing in on the relationship in each movie. And so I ended up leaving off a lot that I thought were going to be here. Like Alvy Singer and Annie Hall, I ultimately decided that's just a general relationship and that's the ultimate romantic comedy. But both of them end up living pretty solid lives after that. I tried not to go too much of deep cuts. Like I could have done De Niro and Meryl Streep or Christopher Walken and Meryl Streep in The Deer Hunter, but I didn't want to go too deep into these. I wanted them to be a little bit more front and center in the movie, with the exception of course, one of them that I will talk about when we get to it, which it's just impossible to leave it off. And I guess it permeates throughout the entire movie, even if it's not that big a part of the movie. But John, here we are, top 10 Valentine's Day heartbreaks. You had a lot of people worrying about you on your Letterboxd over the last week.
I did.
Was it worth it, John? Was it worth it?
I mean, I was watching some really good movies, but I'm sad. I'm very, you know, it hit right as the first snowfall hit Victoria this week. So that also already had me down. And then I'm watching all these very, very sad movies centered around very depressing relationships, and wasn't great for my mental health this week. If you see my review after watching After Sun last night, it just says, can I start watching happy movies again?
Yeah, I mean, After Sun was one of those experiences, man. And I'm going to talk about that movie eventually here, because it ended up making my list. But it's like, that's just one of those movie going experiences where I can understand why some people found that movie to be too artsy and didn't really like it, and maybe were off put by it. I'm not surprised it didn't get a Best Picture nomination, even though it should have back in 2022. It doesn't surprise me because it is a very, very, very artsy movie. And when it started off and we're literally listening to Sophie like breathe in bed, I'm like, okay, this is pretentious nonsense. Typical A24 crowd trying to tell me something is better than it really is. And then the funniest part is now I gave it 4.5 stars, which means it's in contention for my top 100. I don't know if the movie will hit me as hard the second time I watch it. We're going to dive fully into that one for tomorrow's $5 Tuesday. And we'll definitely get really heavily into After Sun then. So stick around, stay tuned. If you're already a $5 patron, listen to us talk about one of the more modern movies we're going to talk about, because we do tend to kind of bounce around and talk about some older movies and things like that. But yeah, so today, top 10 Valentine's Day heartbreaks. Let's dive in. Let's get it started. John, you normally go first, don't you?
I do normally go first.
Too bad. Today I go first because I'm starting with a movie that nobody's going to have seen. And I just wanted to include this one because, one, I do think it's a very depressing relationship. It's one that really stuck with me after I watched it. I'm still making my way through the Ingmar Bergman collection that Criterion put out. And it's one of those, box sets that there's so many movies in it. And when you sit down and watch a Bergman movie, it's not like Bergman's not like a TV show, right? It's not Survivor where you sit down, you watch an episode. You're like, oh, let's watch the next one. Oh, that'll be nice. It's like you sit down, you watch a Bergman movie, and then you're like, okay, do I really want to put myself through that again? When will I be ready to put myself through that again? So while he has his hits, like Scenes from a Marriage, that's a movie we've talked about on the, I forget if we did that for the podcast or we did that for $5 Tuesdays. We talked about Scenes from a Marriage.
You just mentioned it at some point. I think you mentioned it as like the best thing you watched 1 week because I still haven't seen it.
Okay. So yeah, I talked about Scenes from a Marriage for something. There's the mini series and there's the actual movie and there's all of that. There's plenty of really depressing things. I mean, Wild Strawberries, I could argue that the main character's relationship with himself could be one of the most depressing relationships in film history, but I didn't want to get too avant-garde and nonsensical. So I went with a movie that I really connected with big time the first time I watched it. It cracked me up because a lot of people think it's one of the weakest entries in Bergman's collection. And that's this movie called To Joy. And it's about the relationship I'm talking about in it is Marta and Stieg from To Joy. And this movie is very simply about a woman gets in a car accident and dies. And then we watch their relationship play out before that. But it gets so into... they're both violinists and the one wants to be an all-time great. And it's how they meet when they're both violinists and his ambition just keeps getting in the way of everything. And watching the relationship unfold, knowing that it's going to be absolutely tragic, knowing that everything's going to happen terribly for them, it had to make my list. So I'm including it on here. It's one of the hidden gems of Bergman's collection. There's a lot of movies that a lot of people like really revere from Bergman's collection that so far have been like, eh, that was okay. Like, I don't really get it. I do think sometimes when you get a director like Bergman, some people just want to tell you that movies are really good because they've seen them. But this is not one of those. I'm telling you, like, this was just a movie that really took me by surprise. It's one of the lesser regarded, but it is so worth a watch. And the relationship of Marta and Stieg is so worth it. And it kind of sets up like, you know, I'm starting with a foreign movie for this, an international film for this. I'm going to be ending with an international film for this too, which might surprise some people when I actually get to what it is. But yeah, so I'm starting with my number 10. It is Marta and Stieg from To Joy.
Yeah, you're right. I've never seen this movie. I do need to get more on Bergman. I haven't watched a lot of Bergman, but I'm excited to. Scenes from a Marriage was one of the ones I was considering watching this week. And it's just hard to carve out the necessary time to watch it.
Oh, does John not have enough time to watch a long movie? Was it too long for him?
Oh, I had to watch
Tongo.
I had to go for quantity, unfortunately, in order to properly make this list. So I just had to leave off one that I hadn't seen instead. But
I mean, I felt like with Scenes from a Marriage too. The series and the movie are both depressing. They have their depressing moments, but I was looking for movies that end on dark notes. Like yep. They end where things weren't okay. Things don't get better. And even if the movie doesn't end on the note, like somebody dies, something's heartbreaking, something's depressing. And some of these relationships, it's not even so much that like, wow, this is so heartbreaking because they were mean to each other or it didn't work out or anything. It's just like, yeah, somebody died and that made it heartbreaking and that's depressing. So, but yeah, I wanted to start with this because Scenes from a Marriage, when you watch it, it doesn't end on the most negative of notes, especially when some of the stuff that comes from before it is pretty hard to watch. So the way the Criterion Collection sets it up is they have you watch the mini series, then watch the movie. So if you're able to do it that way, John, go ahead and do it that way because it's interesting to see what they cut from the movie. And I think the movie has cuts out probably the best scene or one of the most important plot points from the mini series. And it blew my mind that they did that. But anyway, so yeah. You're up.
I am. And my approach to this list, I really wanted to focus on like different types of relationships that were going on. So we don't just have romantic relationships. We have other types of relationships as well. But more importantly, my criteria couldn't just be they don't end up together in the end. Mm-hmm. Because if that was the case, something like Casablanca just becomes number one.
Yeah.
Right. And we try everything not to get Casablanca on these top 10 lists, apparently.
And we haven't done it yet. Good for us. We're doing a hell of a job.
Really good. But that's the ultimate movie of they don't end up together. But in the end, it's kind of a happy ending. So we couldn't really go with that. So I'm going to kick it back. And I'm going to start us off just with the classic love tragedy, Sometimes, you know, it's written 500 years ago, and it's considered one of the greatest tragedies of all time for a reason. And I am going with Romeo and Juliet. And there are so many different interpretations of Romeo and Juliet you can take with this to figure out, like, which one is the most depressing. You could go with the Zeffirelli film. You could go with any of the millions of other adaptations of Romeo and Juliet. You could go with something like West Side Story, where there's the heartbreak of Maria after watching Tony die and kind of having to live with that and not dying herself. But ultimately, I think the most tragic ending, and it is kind of like the most praise you can really heap onto this movie, does come from Baz Luhrmann's interpretation of the film.
Look at that, John. I'd already written the plus. I knew where you were going.
Oh, yeah. So it does come down to Romeo plus Juliet. And specifically, it's one very distinct decision Baz Luhrmann has in that final scene. And it is Claire Danes' Juliet opening her eyes right before Leo's Romeo kills himself. It is absolutely one of the most tragic things because they are so close to just being connected again. And it's taken away right in front of her eyes, resulting in her also killing herself. It is absolutely tragic. And again, it's low on my list because is it as tragic and as moving as what else I have on this list? I'm not really crying as much when it happens, but it does evoke that. And it is, I think it would kind of be disingenuous for either of us not to include kind of the be-all, end-all tragic ending to a romance on either of our lists.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree. I didn't put this on there. I do think that this is the best version of this telling. Like, I know West Side Story. I'm talking about like authentic, full 100% adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. I feel like this is my favorite one. I like it more than the Zeffirelli one. And, you know, I think that Claire Danes is so good in that movie. Like, she really is so good in that movie. I don't know about the Harold Perrineau version of Mercutio, but like, everything else is like really solid in that movie. I just feel like the Harold Perrineau Mercutio, you're like, what, where is this coming from? It's so out of nowhere. But Claire Danes is what really takes that to the next level. And Baz Luhrmann, I mean, for as you know, he has some of those fast paced walking scenes and stuff in that movie, which are really stupid, but for the most part, he nailed it. That might be one of the best movies he ever did. So good for him. Romeo and Juliet coming in at 10.
Yeah. I guess that takes me to my number 9. And this one, I would be shocked if it didn't end up on your list, Phil. And it was one that I was humming and hawing about whether or not I wanted to include it. But ultimately, sometimes the relationship seems like it ends happy, and then you get that last longing moment that proves to you it is not a happy ending for a relationship. It's Benjamin Braddock and Elaine Robinson from The Graduate.
Yeah, see, for me, I didn't put this one in there because at the end of the day, they still have hope. They might not have much, but they have hope. They have
I
hope.
Don't think they have hope at all.
No, but here's why. They're still alive, and they're on that bus together. Okay. They have more hope than anybody else on my list.
I get that, right? Because in the end, they are still together. But it is that look of realization that ends The Graduate that really takes this one up there for me. And again, what you were saying is kind of why I was humming and hawing about whether or not to include it, right? They are still technically together, but it's so depressing. And the other reason I didn't really want to include The Graduate is because The Graduate's kind of a funny movie for the most part. It's a comedy, is the way you would kind of keep it. And it didn't feel quite the way this list was going, but in the end, I think we kind of needed that levity to it because, like I said, the rest of the movie is very depressing. But it's that moment, that blank stare with both of them just looking forward as the movie ends. It's just like, yeah, this is just that realization you've made one of the biggest mistakes of your entire life.
Yeah, exactly. But they're young, they have hope. I think in all of mine, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 of the 10. I can't confirm or deny the 8th one. Okay. 8 of my 10, somebody ends up dead.
Oh my.
In the other two, it's just really downer endings. So it's like, there you go. That like these two are young. They have their futures ahead of them. Yes, I agree. The Graduate does end on a downer note. But for me, I ultimately left it off this list because Also, I didn't want to just make this a reiteration of my top 100.
And that's totally fair. I get that.
One, two, three, four. I have five movies not from my top 100 on this list, which is pretty good.
I have six. I beat you.
Wow, that's pretty good too. But you tried harder. You actually went.
I did try harder.
I was putting my list together here, and if I really wanted to, I could change out one of them real quick. All right, number nine. It's the movie John just made me watch. I am going to go with After Sun. So when John and I sat down to do this, we said it doesn't just have to be like, again, romantic relationships. It doesn't just have to be these. Oh, they, you know, it's Valentine's Day. Yes. But it can still be like, who is the love of your life, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. It can sometimes be son, daughter, anything like that. And After Sun, like I said, I wasn't sure. And we're going to talk about this in depth for $5 Tuesdays tomorrow. So I won't dive in too much here. And I know, John, you have it on your list as well. Sure. But it really does do a phenomenal job of capturing a father-daughter relationship where the father is so not okay that it's going to impact the daughter in the future. And you know that, and you're seeing how happy the daughter is, but he's already starting to rub off on her. The karaoke scene is one of the most brutal scenes I've ever watched. That thing is just like, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's so awful. But the scene for me, and again, we'll dive deeper, but the scene for me that just opened the waterworks and pretty much made it, so I said, oh my God, this movie's on a different level, is when she wakes up in her bed as an adult.
Yeah.
And it's the first time we see her as an adult, and the camera pans and the rug is under the bed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, that is the brilliance of filmmaking. Like, I always talk about George Miller's Fury Road. That is taking cinema to the next level. You don't need a lot of dialogue, huge action scenes, big scope, whatever. That shot right there is on par with that because it tells you everything you need to know about Callum. It tells you everything you need to know about where Sophie is at in her life.
Yeah.
Sophie and Callum's relationship is absolutely devastating. I don't have it as my number one parent-child relationship on this list, but that was a devastating, devastating, devastating relationship. And it belongs on here because they never tell you exactly what happens, but you can infer what happens.
I have this later on my list, so I'll talk about it a little bit later.
Well, here's another one that I'm pretty sure you're going to end up having on your list, and it's going to take me an hour and a half to type. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Wow, this is actually also my number seven, or my number eight, sorry.
It is your number eight. Wow.
It is my number eight as well. Yeah.
Well, give me a second then here. Let's just copy and paste so I don't have to do this twice. Okay, good. So we can talk about George and Martha and their wonderful relationship together. John, here's the interesting thing about George and Martha's relationship to me that almost kept it off this list. They're very mean to each other for most of this movie. But from a depressing standpoint, you're like, okay, they're just old. They're out of love, like whatever. But when they start to figure out, when you get, oh my God, what's her name? Sandy Dennis. When you get her saying, oh, I see what's going on here.
Yeah.
And you start to realize what's actually happening and just how bad their lives really are and why it's so bad and why they're suffering as much as they are with the child. That's when I'm like, ooh, this one has to go on here. And this is one of the few where nobody dies. They're still alive. They're still alive. And actually the child that they're...
Someone dies, but...
But is the child, I don't think, I forget, I haven't seen it in a little bit, but is the child ever born? I feel like the whole thing is that she
couldn't. No, he died.
Really? I got to look this up now.
It's like the climax of the film is him telling her that he died in the car accident that he described earlier in the film.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah, I've only seen this movie twice. It ends up like way up in my ranking, but in my top 100 and stuff. I've only seen it twice though. So I forgot if it was like, oh, there's still, if he was ever born or if he died, I forgot. I just know he's not still alive the way they're talking about him in the movie. But anyway, yeah. So that's when you're like, yeah, no, this movie is beautiful. Good for them. Love these two. This story, the relationship between them. There's no happiness in their lives. There's nothing there. They can't get it back. And again, that's what I'm looking for when I'm looking for these top 10 Valentine's Day heartbreaks. If you're not going on a date on Valentine's Friday night, if you're not going to do something fun, these are the movies you'd be sitting down to watch. Put yourself in the mood.
Exactly. And the reason why I end up including Martha and George here is what it really comes down to is this relationship is so toxic, it's bleeding into another relationship.
Yeah.
And that's where it really gets depressing, is they have their problems, but they hate each other to the core so much that they have to bring other people in to make them hate them as well.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's so tragic. It's a long watch. It's a hard watch. It is a very hard film to watch, especially if you grew up in a place where your parents were arguing. I can only imagine what sitting through this movie would feel like. But it is one of those relationships, like, yes, technically they're still together at the end of the movie. And that's almost makes it worse, is the fact that it's just going to keep perpetuating over and over again. And the toxicity just doesn't have an end to it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like whatever young couple is going to come work at the college is just going to be their next victim. You're invited to a dinner party at George and Martha's. Like, that's, you know, that's the whole thing with this movie. And it's that feeling of you can't get out of it. Right. Like, they will never be whole again, and they will never be complete. And it's why Richard Burton lets her get away with it over and over and over again as the movie goes on. And that reveal late in the movie is just so well executed and so patient. Like, the patience of Mike Nichols with this movie is just stellar. And so, yeah, George and Martha, there you go. We both had him at number eight. That's great.
Very convenient.
So my number seven is Tyler and Alexis in Waves. Movie that hit my top 100. And so this is one of, I have this one, and then I have three more from my top 100 that are on here. But how does this relationship not make it? This relationship is absolutely brutal. The pressures and the injury and everything that this guy, Tyler, goes through ultimately leads to him actually killing his high school girlfriend, who is no longer his high school girlfriend. And it's an accidental thing, but he gets to the point where he's like abusive and all this. And what I think this movie does such a great job of is it shows them both as happy, normal people. Mm-hmm. And because it's showing them as happy, normal people before the downfall, you get more of a connection with them. It's the whole Blue Valentine thing, which, you know, I'll talk about later. But it's like you're watching them be so happy, and you understand that they really could be so happy. But there's that bit of devastation and depression that is just there, that is lingering the entire time. And you know something bad is going to happen. And then when it does, you can't help but be absolutely devastated. This is like one of the ultimate tragedies. And what's really crazy about it is it's only the first hour of the movie. The second hour of the movie has nothing. I mean, it has a lot to do with that. Obviously, it's all about that relationship. But it's those characters aren't in it anymore. And it becomes about the sister and how she's trying to live with it with her father and her mother and all that. So for me, this one, hands down, like when you have a love story that starts off with them seeing Floridada going over Key Biscayne Bridge, and then it ends with him killing her and getting arrested and going to jail for life, I'd call that a tragedy and I'd call that a heartbreak. So there you go. That's my number seven.
That is definitely one that I considered for my list as well. Obviously, it is an instance where, and because we follow the relationship so closely for the first hour of that film up until the point where he accidentally kills her, and then that has its ramifications that also play out in the film, this is another instance of a relationship affecting all the other characters in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like, it's called Waves for a reason. Yeah. But
it's not subtle.
No. But I think that's one of the things that it's interesting when you look at some of these relationships on here, I think, is how does it impact other people in the film? And that leads to the tragedy of it as well.
Yeah. All right. What's your number seven?
Because my number seven is technically one that kind of ends happy, but I cry like a baby every time I see it. So there's no way that I couldn't include it on this list. It's Past Lives. It's Nora and Ha-Sung in Past Lives.
I feel like that one, okay, that one doesn't really end happy.
Got
the Shakespeare in Love type ending, right? Like, I didn't include Shakespeare in Love on my list because, yeah, I get it. It's not necessarily, like, the worst thing that's ever happened, but it's certainly still depressing.
So there is a tinge of hope in the ending of the movie. Obviously, especially, I think, the moment where I literally can't stop crying at all is that interaction between Nora and Ha-Sung as Ha-Sung's getting into his Uber at the end of the film. Mm-hmm. And Ha-Sung just gives the line, what if this is one of our past lives and we're already together in another, right? Mm-hmm. And like that is that kind of hope to it. And it does end optimistically. I've spoken about this movie a lot and just kind of like the symbolism that happens in it. And Hossung is progressing to the right with an open window for the first time after that movie. And that's a big thing to kind of show the optimism of it. But then it's also juxtaposed with Nora crying for the first time as an adult in Arthur's arms at the end, which also kind of does have a happiness to it because of the what it talks about earlier in the film, where she stopped crying after she immigrated because she realized nobody cared. Mm-hmm. So like she realizes somebody cares this time. But I mean, you also have lines like, I didn't realize liking your husband would hurt so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And things like that. Right. Like there is, it is tragic and sad, but the movie knows what it's doing with the relationship too. And is playing on that tragedy, right? We have the entire scene of Nora and Arthur in bed together where Arthur's like, if this was a book, I'd be the like villain American husband who's keeping you away from the love of your life.
Yeah, no, I mean, Pat's Life is great. I've still only seen that once, so I got to rewatch that. And I don't think that ends on a positive note, though. Like, I get what you're saying.
No, I say that there's hope. Cathartic. It's not positive, but there is hope.
Yeah, there's definitely more hope. Well, and hope is a bad thing for this list, John. Hope
I know, but I mean, this movie makes me cry like no other movie ever. So.
I guess that gets you far enough here.
Yeah.
All right, and then what do you have at number six, since we both had eight and it threw off our rhythm?
It did. I have Blue Valentine. I have Dean and Cindy in Blue Valentine.
Oh, that's way too low.
Ah, well, that's fine. You had After Sun too low, so it's fine. We're countering each other out here. This, it's very similar to George and Martha and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, right? Except it's depicted in the way more tragic way of, hey, we're going to show you that these two are not getting along with each other at all, and then we're going to show the beginning of their relationship. Mm-hmm. And that juxtaposition that is used in the film makes it so much more tragic because you see them falling in love and out of love at the same time. And it's just so sad.
Blue Valentine, and I have it much higher on my list here, but Blue Valentine is the ultimate anti-Valentine's Day movie. Like, to me, that's what this is. This movie is just, and you always think about that type of stuff, right? Or maybe you don't always think about that kind of stuff. Maybe I'm a weirdo, but it's like you think about these things in your life of you're making these decisions not knowing what the outcome is. But eventually you're going to get to a point where you're going to look back on the decisions you made and say, am I happy with this? Did I make the right decision? Did I go right when I should have went left? Like, what happened? And what's so amazing about movies and TV and books and whatever is that you can see both at the same time. And that's what's so beautiful about this movie is you get to see them as an older couple. Mm-hmm. And you get to see them young and in love and so full of optimism and energy and excitement and everything. And now you get to see them old and you're rooting for them. Don't you remember? Go back to this. But we remember it because it's a 2-hour movie. They don't remember it because it's 20 years plus of lived life. And well, I like think
seven,
that,
but
is that all it is? Yeah, whatever. I mean,
well, because it's whatever the daughter's age.
Yeah,
is
I'm plus, more talking you know, in terms of like grand big picture of like these types of movies. But yes, it's only seven because it's however old she is. You're right. But it's like in the grand scheme of how long the relationships are, they just forget about it. Mm-hmm. And it is, that's why I love Mike Mills movies so much. I've always talked about 20th Century Women. I like Beginners a lot. The reason I like his movies so much is because he always looks into the future for his characters. And he allows you to see what the outcome of their decisions is going to be before you even see their decisions. And you know that they can't understand their decisions. And that's what's so beautiful about Blue Valentine is it's like you see Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams young and love saying all these cute things. She's got the priest joke. He's got a ukulele. It's all so good. Yeah. And then it all goes so south.
And it's shot in a way where it's just, it's really clever how it's cut because especially when we have the scene in the liquor store where Cindy's getting alcohol and runs into what's his face? Mike Ontario.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is a really weird interaction. And Dean's response to it's really weird. And then as we get further onto the movie, we find out that there's a question that this might be the father of his child.
No, there's no question. It is the father of his child.
Well, there's a little question.
It's the father of his child. It's
for the point being is like you understand Dean's response at that point.
Yeah.
But this it's just a movie that it's so sad. It's so tragic. because, and especially like being someone who's been through a divorce, like I've been there, I've felt it, right? Like the falling out of love. I mean, lots of people have fallen out of love, but it's hard because it kind of does feel just as sudden as falling into love. And Blue Valentine just really shows it so well. And I think what really helps with this is it is very confined to Dean and Cindy, with the exception of, you know, Dean like blowing up at the office and stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously. But besides that, it's so confined just to the two of them. And that's what makes it even more tragic, because they don't even have anyone who can really help them out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 exactly. They're both kind of loner outcasts who found each other, you know, and as in a film going audience, we're like, but they're so good looking, but it's like, yeah, but they don't really have friends. We don't hear them talk about any friends. No. All right, I'm going to go to my number six. And so this is my other parental / child relationship. And that's from Terms of Endearment with Aurora and Emma. This movie's definitely dated at this point. This Best Picture winner from 83, I think. It's definitely dated, but it's got Shirley MacLaine, Deborah Winger, Jack Nicholson, all of this stuff. And this movie is about a mother trying to prevent her daughter from making the same mistake she made. She's overprotective. They're best friends, all of these things, you know, blah, 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 blah. If you haven't seen Terms of Endearment, fast forward a minute. If you're John, too bad, you're suffering. I'm sure you know the ending of this movie anyway. But do you know the ending of this movie?
No.
I won't spoil it then.
No, all go ahead, spoil it. It's fine. It's not pivotal. Fine.
All I'm going to say is the relationship between this mother and daughter is so incredible because it spans all these years. And the mother is so unhappy and she meets Jack Nicholson, and Jack Nicholson just is this free loving astronaut. And it's like, come on, just get out. You got to stick up your ass. You know, that's how she acts. And her daughter is living her own life, and the mother just doesn't agree with some of the decisions and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, when the daughter gets sick, it comes down to, I got to be there for her, even when maybe her husband isn't, or even when whatever. Shirley MacLaine's performance in this movie is spectacular. It's so, 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 so good. And I won't get into too much detail about how it ends, but if it's on my heartbreaks list and 8 of the 10 movies end with a death, I think, because of After Sun, I'm assuming. But 8 of the 10, if they end with a death, just know that I've already mentioned George and Martha. That's one that doesn't. And I've already mentioned that I'm going to have Dean and Cindy on, and they don't die either. So there you go for this one. This movie's devastating. This is, I don't want to call it a chick flick because it's not really a chick flick, but it is like it's one of the only female focused movies to ever win Best Picture. It is very much focused on the relationship between the mother and daughter. And even when Nicholson comes in, it's about Shirley MacLaine's relationship with him. It's not about his relationship with Shirley MacLaine. And I think that's like very important. So for this to come out in 1983 and ultimately win Best Picture is pretty incredible. It's Larry McMurtry who wrote The Last Picture Show. So yeah, it's not a happy movie.
Yeah.
It's not a happy movie. Although it's James L. Brooks, so it's kind of a little bit, I don't know, kind of a little bit of a over the top. Like sometimes it's like, you know, it's not as dramatic, it's a little melodramatic, whatever, but it works. It's good. Jack Nicholson wins his underrated Oscar, the one that people don't talk about Jack Nicholson winning. Like they talk about him winning for Cuckoo's Nest. They talk about him winning for As Good As It Gets. Nobody really talks about him winning for Terms of Endearment. So there you go.
I've never seen this one. I'm going to have to, but I think I might wait a couple of weeks. Maybe.
Really? Yeah. Give yourself, get it out of the way.
I mean, with what our next week is, I have a different type of depressing movie I have to watch for a little while.
I know. By the way, anybody who's listening right now, if you're wondering what next week is, it's the 10 worst movies nominated for Best Picture since 2000. So we'll be getting to that. Okay. My number 5 is Robbie and Cecilia from Atonement.
Yeah.
They didn't deserve it. They still don't deserve it. I'm making John read this book for a book club. They don't deserve it. It's just so brutal. What is so painful about this movie is they give you the idea that like, wow, they did get back together and they gave you the happiness. And obviously at the end of the movie, we hear Saoirse Ronan's adult character say, I wanted to give them the happy ending that they didn't get because I took that from them. And knowing that it was taken from them, but we still get to watch it play out as if it could have happened. Like
heartbreaking.
Middle finger. Yep. Hate you guys so much. If you want to hear a full podcast on Atonement, It was in my top 100, still is in my top 100, but we did a top 100 movies podcast involving Atonement. So if you want to listen to that more in depth, go ahead and check it out. All I know is that when Atonement ended the first time, I was like, man, I really, really hate this movie. That was just, it's so, when the water comes rushing in to that tunnel, when she's with her voiceover, it's just like, I didn't need that. I didn't deserve it. Robbie and Cecilia didn't deserve it, but I didn't deserve it either.
I was very close to putting Atonement on my list, but ultimately I decided I didn't want to watch it again because I didn't want to be that depressed.
Oh, there you go. Instead, you get to
got to the end of the week, and I was like, I have to draw the line somewhere, and it's Atonement.
Eventually, you got to give yourself a break, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, this was one that was like highly in contention for my list. Had I rewatched it, probably would have made it on there. But it was kind of hard because my list kind of had number 10 locked with Romeo and Juliet. Because I didn't want to take it off the list. So it was really difficult. So it probably would have like ended up replacing The Graduate, which I think like works. But yeah, it's definitely one of the sadder, tragic love stories for sure.
All right, what do you got at number 5 for yourself?
Number 5 is one of those that is more tragic because you know it's doomed to fail the entire time. And that is Marianne and Heloise in Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
I still haven't seen that.
I know, it's a tragedy in itself, but it's also like a very tragic relationship. Because what happened, for those who haven't seen this French film from 2018, it's about a woman who is commissioned to paint a portrait of another woman who is being married off to a Milanese man. And it's like supposed to be part of the marriage and everything like that, is to get this portrait of the woman. But the two women end up falling in love with each other. And it's very much this sense of freedom that they get with each other. It does have a lot of similarities to Brokeback Mountain, which I'll be talking about in a little bit. But when it really gets down to it, it's so tragic because they can't be together and they're so in love with each other. And they still hold that torch for each other. And in the epilogue, it really shows that they're still holding that torch for each other. But they've never seen each other since the end of since they parted ways off this island that they were living on for this couple of weeks. They're the hints and the closing sequence with Heloise at the symphony listening to Vivaldi. It's just one of those moments where it's like, oh, please stop so I can stop crying.
I will watch it eventually. Eventually, I will get to it one day. Have you seen Water Lilies yet or no?
No, I haven't.
Same director.
Oh, good.
Same director. I haven't seen that either, but I know that Water Lilies is another one. Came out in 2007 that's pretty highly regarded by Celine Sciamma. Sciamma? I don't know how to say her last name, but yes. I'll have to see that. Number 4, John.
Number 4 is finally After Sun. I have After Sun here because, and this is the only non-romantic relationship I have in my top 100, and it's just devastating. Like you said, like the karaoke scene, heartbreaking. It's just like, what's going on? You're seeing this drift between these two parents, or this parent and his daughter, and it's all wrapped in this sense of how accurate is what we're seeing to what actually transpired on this vacation, and this idea of an untrustworthy narrator and everything like that, and that closing sequence to Under Pressure, might be one of the most depressing scenes of all time.
That closing sequence to Under Pressure is so unbelievably well handled. Yeah. It really is.
You can listen to us talk about it over on the Patreon.
Yeah, no, the Under Pressure scene is crazy good, crazy good. That is a movie that manages to hit nostalgia, melancholy, all of that stuff, and keep it real.
It's one of those movies that makes you kind of want to phone your parents afterwards and just talk to them and make sure they know you love them.
No, I just wanted to go on an hour-long walk by myself.
That's that too.
I wasn't thinking about calling anyone. I almost called off the podcast. That's all I was trying to do. It is tremendous. And it's crazy that Charlotte Wells hasn't made another movie. She never made one before. It was all shorts and she hasn't made one since. I mean, granted, it's only been 2.5 years and half Hollywood has been shut down, but what are you going to do?
She's English, isn't she?
Scottish, but it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah. even if you go, she can make a movie in Europe and then you're not gonna be able to send it out here. You know, you gotta be able to get some sort of US theatrical. But anyway, my number four is Carla Nelly. No way, wasn't gonna include that on my list. This is from Up, obviously. Look, it's only the first 10-15 minutes of the movie. It is the most devastating 10-15 minutes of a movie maybe ever. It is just, it's so ridiculous. And like the fact that they animated this with weird looking people, like they made them like too short and like bricky and whatever. Like the fact that they just did this and there's so much emotion packed into this of what was supposed to be a children's movie, air quotes, children's movie. And then it gets into just adventure, adventure, adventure after that. But to watch that story, to watch it, we meet, we're young, we're in love, and inevitably death comes for everyone, right? It's just to watch that unfold. And the shot that always gets me is when the silhouettes are running up the mountain. And now he's up there before her and she's behind. Brilliant. Not going to talk too much about it because I refuse to cry on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it is probably one of the best prologues to a film ever.
That and Lord of the Rings, right? Yeah. Like, can't think of anything else.
Yeah. I mean, I think the moment that gets me is the moment where they realize they can't have a child.
Yeah.
That's the one that I think really gets me there. And then obviously, ultimately, I didn't include this relationship because I went with relationships that were a little more focused in the film. And because I also didn't want to just cry for an hour and a half straight while watching Up. But yeah, this totally makes sense. I think if you ask anyone, like, what's the most tragic love story you've ever seen on a film, I think, like, 9 out of 10 people might tell you.
No, most people are going to think of this. Yeah, because this is just one of those movies. That opening hits everyone, whether you're young, whether you're old, whether you're middle-aged, whether you're in a relationship, whether you're single, whether you have kids, whether you don't. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It literally hits everyone. It hits everyone. It is one of the most universal sequences ever put on film.
Yeah.
I could have put it at number one. I didn't. Two of my top three aren't even in my top 100, John. I think two of these top three I've never mentioned on this podcast.
Actually, the three of mine are my remaining three are not in my top 100 at all.
There you go. Maybe we have the same ones without meaning to.
Don't think so, but we might.
Number three. I don't know if I ever mentioned this on here. Kathy and Tommy from Never Let Me Go.
Okay.
Have I mentioned that on here or no?
I don't know if you've mentioned it on here. I know we've talked about this film before.
Have you seen this?
I have.
I had to do this.
As long as it's the movie that I remember that it is. Yes, it is. Okay, cool.
Yeah, with Carey Mulligan and Andrew Garfield and Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
And this is Andrew Garfield and Carey Mulligan that I'm talking about.
Yes.
So anybody who's not familiar with this movie, it's based on a book by Kazuo Ishiguro, and it came out in 2005. It's a brilliant book. This is an instance where the book is definitely better than the movie. This is a very good movie. I really enjoy this movie. The book is better than the movie. So, but if you're not familiar with this story, because it really did go kind of unnoticed when it got released theatrically, this movie is about a school made out that is for strictly children who have been created to harvest organs. They are literally like, so life has been expanded beyond 100 years. There's a process where all these people can live for a really long time. And now there's a school where where these children are created. And I don't remember if they're born or created. I haven't seen the movie in a while. I can't remember if they're born or created, but either way,
I believe they're created, but
whatever it is, the whole point of their existence is to take their organs and give them to the people who want to continue living. That's it. That's their whole point. I think they are created because I think they're versions
they're
of
clones, I believe.
Yeah, that's what it is. The three of them, Tommy and Ruth and Kathy, the three of them are really good friends and they find out this. And then as they get older, they all have to get ready for their donations and things like that. This movie is so depressing. The story is so depressing. Like everything I just told you, it does not have a happy ending. It's not, oh, everything goes, oh, no. It is so devastating of a story. And yeah, Kathy and Tommy land here on my list at number three, right behind, and I'm going to jump ahead of you here, but right behind my number two, which is Blue Valentine. So my number three is Never Let Me Go, and my number two is Blue Valentine. And I want to say those both, because then my number one is going to be a movie that I don't know if I've ever mentioned on this podcast. And quite frankly, John, it's a movie I don't like. That's what I'm even more excited about, is it's a movie that I don't like, but I don't think that you can argue that it's not the most depressing, heartbreaking love story ever put on film after you've seen it. So
I don't know. My number one's pretty heartbreaking and depressing too. So
we'll talk. But yeah, so I go Never Let Me Go here at number three, and then Dean and Cindy at number two. I always just think about the fireworks going off at the end of the movie when he's telling his daughter to go home, and it's just silence other than the fireworks. And then it cuts to Grizzly Bear playing whatever song for the end credits with the fireworks exploding. You see them in Love, Young, blah, blah, blah. It is that, to me, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is the greatest love story ever told. Blue Valentine, though, is the greatest, like I said, like anti-love story ever told. Yeah. It really is. I mean, and that trailer is still to this day the greatest trailer ever made. That trailer, I could watch that trailer and give it 5 stars and put it in my top 100. It's the greatest trailer ever made, and it captures this whole movie. And this movie is just, yeah, it's beautiful. Dean and Cindy, they're my number two.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Never Let Me Go, that movie is really amplified by the performances by Andrew Garfield and Carey Mulligan in those roles. Especially because, like, it's still, I mean, we're kind of still at a point where Carey Mulligan does not get the respect she deserves.
And she doesn't at all.
In general. Like, neither of them.
Promising Young Woman, and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, look, she's talented. It's like, where the hell have you been? Yeah. And trust me, in a week, on the 18th, we're talking about The Blind Side, because it's one of the worst Best Picture winners, or Best Picture nominees of all time. And she lost to Sandra Bullock for The Blind Side. So it's just insane. It's insane. She's so talented. Yeah.
So my number three, I don't think you're surprised for me to have this movie on my list here. It's Chow and Soo Lee from In the Mood for Love.
Dude, here's my thing. I don't really like In the Mood for Love that much.
Yeah, I've noticed that because I saw your Letterboxd review after I reviewed this movie.
I think it's super overrated. And trust me, the second time I watched it, I liked it so much more than the first time I watched it. I first watched this for the first time in college. I hated this movie. And then I watched it second time, like, that's a good movie. It doesn't hit me, so I want to hear it. Go.
Okay, Wong Kar-wai just does such a spectacular job with this movie, and a lot of it comes down to the fact, and I think it's really interesting seeing this movie, Wong Kar-wai creates a Hong Kong cinema film that is shot exactly like a European cinema. It's a European film. Mm-hmm. You watch this movie, it's not shot like Asian cinema, it is shot like European cinema. Quite frankly, it's a lot of Ingmar Bergman in this movie. And this relationship is, and why I find this relationship so tragic, it is two people who happen to be living beside each other who find out that their spouses are cheating on them with each other. And why it's such a tragic love story is they end up falling in love with each other, but decide at the very onset when they key together that their spouses are cheating on each other, that they can't be like that. They cannot stoop to their level and start cheating with each other or cheating on their spouses either. And because of that, we just watch them progress, and they have this friendship that evolves into love. And it is so painful. It is so tragic. And the ending sequence of this film that is set up previously, where we have the description of people, when they have a deep, dark secret, they carve out a hole in a tree, they whisper it into it, and then they fill it up with mud to let it stay there forever. And then when we get to Angkor Wat at the end of this film, and we see Chow whispering into the wall in Angkor Wat and then walking away with the hole filled with mud, it is devastating, especially because it follows up this like near miss of them being in a spot where they could actually be together, and just Chow not knocking on the door to find out Suli's in the apartment.
Yeah, the biggest problem I have with the ending is that it just keeps going after he fills it with mud. They keep showing different shots of like Angkor Wat. I'm like, stop. Stop. Just end it. Like, we end it with the symbolism. Stop. No. It was much better the second time I watched it. And yes, I agree, it's a solid one. I found this to be one of the more overrated movies, just mainly because there's the acclaim for this movie is out of control.
It is. People love
it. Now you're not helping it.
I know, but you can also not watch this movie and not be like, yeah, this is a movie John's gonna love.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it wasn't. It's not.
Was my first 4.5 of the year. So, like, this is in contention for my top 100 next time.
There you go. All right, what's your number two?
My number two is Brokeback Mountain. We podcasted about it last week. Enos and Jack in Brokeback Mountain. And again, this kind of like falls into the similar category of like Portrait of a Lady on Fire. This idea of like this love that you know can't be there. And you the thing with Brokeback Mountain that makes it ever so much more tragic is you see, again, the ramifications of this relationship on every relationship these people have. It's just absolutely devastating. And the way that Ang Lee just sets it up, like that slow burn while on Brokeback Mountain until Enos and Jack finally actually connect with each other. And then progressing through it and seeing Enos, you know, speaking of Michelle Williams again, getting married to Michelle Williams' character, and then Jack comes back into his life and he's making out, and Michelle Williams walks out of that apartment and sees them there. Tragic heartbreak right there for that relationship. And then just continued tragedy of these two men who are making excuses to be together, and you get the "I just wish I could quit you" line, which is just absolutely heartbreaking. And then you have the ending where Jack dies, so they can't even continue this tryst anymore. And Enos goes to Jack's parents' house and finds his shirt from Brokeback Mountain. Just like the waterworks cannot stop. Yeah. This is just so much tragedy wrapped into this movie. Ang Lee handles it absolutely perfectly. It's just, I'd be remiss to leave it off this list.
This was my number 10 until I watched After Sun tonight. That's literally what changed it. Like, this was going to be my number 10. Brokeback Mountain's a great movie. It really is. It's one of those, came out 20 years ago. It's great. 20th anniversary of Brokeback Mountain. Go watch it. If it's your first time, it's so good. Kevin Hernandez here says, would My Girl count? Yeah, My Girl definitely counts.
Absolutely.
My Girl is depressing as hell. Yeah, that movie counts.
Yeah.
All right, we both have our number ones. I know what yours is.
I assume so. Yeah.
Whoa, maybe I don't. I don't know if you ever talked about it. I was just going through your Letterboxd reviews. I think I know what yours is.
Yeah, I mean, you can figure it out based on the movies that I watched last week.
Does it have somebody in it that you've already talked about?
No.
Oh, then I don't know what it is. I thought it was going to be All of Us Strangers.
It's not All of Us Strangers. No, I know. That one actually just... I put The Graduate on instead of All of Us Strangers.
Okay.
All of Us Strangers was very close to making my list. Ultimately, I decided that, yes, the relationships are tragic in that movie, but it's more the main character's relationship with himself and his trauma that really drives that movie, rather than his relationship with like the other relationships that are in that movie. Though, again, fantastic movie. If you haven't checked it out, like, check out All of Us.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
No, my number one is Ben and Sarah and Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh yeah, Leaving Las Vegas is brutal.
This is absolutely the most depressing movie I've ever seen, and if you look at my Letterboxd review from it last week, it literally just says, I can't believe I made myself watch this movie again. This was a movie that I thought it would be a one and done for me. And I had no intention of watching it, but I was like, I'm pretty sure this counts and I have to double check. And ultimately what it comes down to, it is, and where the tragedy happens in this movie, this is, again, a relationship that's doomed for failure. Ben is literally drinking himself to sleep or to death in this movie. That is the entire plot of this movie. Nicolas Cage's character is drinking himself to death in Las Vegas. And Sarah is in this terrible, terrible situation, being just like with the relationships with her pimp and everything like that. And she builds this relationship with Ben and falls in love with Ben. And that closing scene of Ben just dead on the bed and Sarah there is absolutely devastating. Oh, this is such a tough watch. Well worth the watch, but this is, you're literally watching a relationship that you know will end as horribly as possible for 2 straight hours.
Have you ever, do you know who wrote the book for Leaving Las Vegas?
No.
So it's a guy named John O'Brien.
Okay.
John O'Brien was born in 1960. He got married in 1979, moved to Los Angeles in 1982, and got divorced in 1992. He wrote a novel called Leaving Las Vegas, dedicated to this woman who he had divorced, which this book did not come out until after they had divorced. No, it was published in 1990. Okay. 1990 was when it was published. He was an alcoholic who was in and out of rehab for years and shot himself in the head in 1994 before this movie was released.
Ugh.
So if that, his father is on the record saying that this novel was his suicide note.
Yeah, I believe it.
So if you already weren't feeling deeply, darkly enough about Leaving Las Vegas, the person who originally wrote this, because Mike Figgis directed the movie, and I think he wrote the screenplay. John O'Brien had died by the time. It is just, it's so brutal. Just know that the person who's going through this, or who wrote this, was going through the same thing Nicolas Cage is going through in this movie. Ultimately, I wouldn't have put this on my list because I feel like Nicolas Cage is the... is everything for me in that movie. Elizabeth Shue is very good, but Nicolas Cage, everything. I've only seen this movie once. I'll never watch it again. And I think one of the best performances, Nicolas Cage is phenomenal in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'll never watch the movie again. I said to my friend when we watched it in college, he was like, oh, that movie's amazing, blah, blah, blah. That's one of my favorites. I was like, I watched a man drown for 2 hours. I'm good. And that leads me into my number one, which is a movie where if you want to watch somebody die for 2 hours, sit down and watch them more. The Michael Haneke movie. I don't know how you say his name. I always say it wrong. Anne and George's relationship in this movie is the most depressing thing ever put on film. I hate this movie. Like, I really do. Maybe I'll rewatch this movie one day and maybe I'll feel differently. When I watched this movie in college, I hated this movie. I hated it. But it has stayed with me, and it is so hard to watch. You are watching a woman just die for the entire movie, and you are watching her husband, because they're both so old, you are watching him be there for her the entire movie as she is dying. It is one of the hardest watches. It's chock full of symbolism. That's how Michael Haneke, I think it's Haneke, that's how he is, right? The white ribbon, funny people, not funny people, funny games. What am I talking about? Funny people. Look, he's great. Like, he makes a lot of really, 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 really good movies. But this movie is just so painfully hard to watch. The Piano Teacher, that's his other one. Their relationship. You don't smile once the entire movie. And the fact that he just called it love, and you are watching an old man be there for his dying wife. And Emmanuelle Riva was nominated for Best Actress that year. She lost. I forget who she lost to. 2012. Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook.
Right.
Brutal movie. I don't recommend, but it's brutal. It's so brutal. And that's what I got. That's what I got. That's my number one. There will never be a more depressing relationship put on. And they're nice. They love each other. That's the craziest part. But this is you're having a good Valentine's Day. Look 60 years into the future. Enjoy yourself.
This was one that I was like, I should probably watch this. I haven't seen it before. And again, it was one where it's like, I don't know if I can watch this right now. Especially like the further into the week I went, I was like, I don't know if I can handle it more.
It's brutal, man. It really is. It's just so brutal. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. It's just so brutal. So I put it at number one. I mean, I don't know what more from a relationship. You are literally watching somebody die for the entire movie. That's it. It's so bad. Anyway, those are our top 10s. So focusing on the relationships, these aren't the movies that are most depressing or most heartbreaking or anything like that, but these are the 10 most depressing relationships according to each of us. So have a good Valentine's Day. Get out there and have yourselves a good one. If you want to become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, we put out our discussion about Emilia Perez today. Oof, for anybody who's a $10 tier and up. We put out a discussion about Emilia Perez. It was an angry one. It was a vile one. We did not like that movie at all. So that was good. Tomorrow we will be talking about After Sun. And then on Thursday we have Anora coming out. And then next week we get into I'm Still Here, which is a movie we both have now seen. And Nickel Boys, which we might be flipping Nickel Boys.
Might be the Brutalist.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how we feel about that. But then we will be doing The Blind Side on Tuesday, because we are doing the worst movies to be nominated for Best Picture since 2000. And that'll be the podcast we do on the 17th. We are doing that next week. That'll be the 17th. John and I are going to be doing the worst movies nominated for Best Picture 2000 to 2025. We got to text Austin that so he can make the graphic. And then on the 24th, we will be doing our Oscar predictions.
Yes.
Cool. All right. That's everything. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will talk to you next week.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.